So we are holding on Ko-Fi and Dalit on the Bay is about the middle of the island by their 2 dots. We learned in the Mishnah that we had another din that Rav Shimon Gamliel said, where in this the halacha is like him, unlike what we learned yesterday, that as far as the question of when you can collect from the Arev, when not, the halacha is not like him. But he said that if you have someone is an Arev for a woman for her ksuba, so now what happens is, let's say when the husband divorces his wife or dies, he has no nechatim, so therefore the Arev is going to have to pay her out of pocket. It has to be the third, it has to be for the reason that we're going to discuss, that the husband, Dafka, is divorcing her. So he doesn't have any nechatim, so the Arev is paying off the ksuba. In order for that to happen, the husband has to make a neder, that he can make a neder, a das rabim, in a way that can never be canceled, that he's never going to be able to remarry her again, that she should never have hana from his nechassim, and that way he won't be able to remarry her again. Otherwise, we could have a knunya over here. Otherwise, they could collect the ksuba, get remarried, and now the arev is out. So to avoid that, we say that the Reb Shimon Gamliel said that the husband has to yadirena hana. He has to declare a neder barabim that his wife can no longer have hana from him. Then the arev can pay her off the ksuba, and then there's no possibility of a knunya.
Where
are we? Go find out on the Bay, in the middle of the island.
And what?
So we're going to tell a case. We're going to tell a case related to this, where this concept came up.
Which concept?
This that we're saying about the Arev for the Ksuba.
How about this question? When they get a divorce, the Arev pays for the Ksuba.
Mm-hmm.
So in order they can't do the Kanunya, he makes a neder that he will not have a knock from her, or she will not have a knock from him. But let's say they win the lottery, and now they want to get back together.
Tough luck. That's why we have a neder al das rabim. There's no hafara possible.
There's no hafara possible.
Right.
Not even if they pay him back, they can't go to a bais din.
Apparently not. No, because al das rabim. So the only way would be if the rabim agreed to it, and that can't happen.
Okay. You can't ever get the entire Chloe's
no,
in one
not.
Room.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So here's a case. Moshe bar Atri arva d'ksuv to the kalsei haven. Moshe Bar Atri, that was his name, was the Arev for his daughter-in-law's Tzura. So his son had gotten married. He was the Arev on behalf of his daughter-in-law's Tzura. Mm. By the way, this is the only person in all of Shas outside of Moshe Rabbeinu named Moshe. So apparently the name was not very common in those days, unlike now. Yeah. Anyway, Rav Huna Brei Tzura Merabonim Hava. Now, his son Rav Huna was a young Talmid Chacham, so the husband of this woman. Utchikalei Milsa, and Rav Huna was poor. Amar Abaya says, Leka the nasal the naspe etzel Rav Huna, is there nobody who might give advice to Rav Huna, the nigger shall devesu, that he should do something like what we described in our Mishnah, that he should divorce his wife, the tazel the tigbik ksuba me'avua, she will go collect the ksuba from his father, who is the Arev. Now, how we're allowed to do that, we're going to see in a second. We're going to talk about how that fits with our Mishnah.
We don't go to the Arev directly.
That's if the loiver himself has what to pay. In the
sure
case, point is, Rav Huna didn't have any money. Therefore, he wouldn't be able to pay off the silver. Therefore, his father, Moshe, would have to. V'hadr Nadra. And then Rav Huna, the Arev is the father, Moshe. And then Rav Huna can remarry his wife. And that way they'll have some money. That way they've collected the silver, and that way now they have some money. Now he won't be in such dire straits.
Why didn't they ask the father directly instead of George?
Because apparently the father didn't want to give. Wait. Apparently the father hadn't wanted to.
It's clear that the father is not giving them money.
Yes. Okay.
So.
Okay. Well, then in that case, do we have a way around this? Omalei Rava. So Rava says, what good would that do? Well, yadirana hanot. Didn't our Mishnah say that if you're going that taka in order for the Arev to pay off the ksuba, the husband has to be madir hana. He has to make this neder that his wife can never have hana from him, and therefore they'll never be able to get remarried. Abai answers, so what? Also called him a garish, but they didn't garish. So what? Does everybody who gets divorced necessarily do it in Beis Din? Practically speaking, nowadays, of course, a get is always arranged by a Beis Din because there's a lot of complicated halachas in it, and you want to make sure it's done right. But in Etzim Inyan, a get does not in principle require the involvement of a Beis Din. In principle, all you need is the husband, the wife, and two Edim.
Having saying you don't have a knot, it's not like
no. The point being, in other words, that who says that Rav Huna, if he was going to use this knunya, basically, if he was going to do it, who says he has to go to a Beis Din to get divorced, where then Beis Din would tell him that in that case you have to be Madu Hana? Or Tosfos says a little bit differently. When it comes to collecting the ksuba, not necessarily is that done with the involvement of Beis Din. So therefore, let him do the Gerushin privately. There'll be nobody to tell him Yadir Hana. It's true, the Mishnah says that he has to do it, but there's not going to be anybody to enforce it.
As long as he's not a client, it's okay.
Hold on. And then it'll work. Rabbi Gershom, by the way, has a slightly different gears over here. He says the question isn't do people not get divorced and based in necessarily. The question is rather Beidin or Rabba, he says, in a great based in. In other words, let's say a divorce has to be done in some kind of based in, fine, in order to make sure just that the basic things are being done right. But who says every based in is familiar with this din over here that Yerudena Hana? So therefore, you could do it that way. Who in the end it turned out, as you said, that Rav Huna was a Kohen, and therefore the idea fell apart because then it won't work. If he divorces her, he'll never be able to remarry her. They didn't know it at the beginning, apparently. Omar Abaya said, this is like the expression that people say, at the poverty follows the poor person. In other words, look at Rav Huna is already poor, and even there could have been an idea over here to make him rich, to get him some money, and it turns out just his luck that even that doesn't work.
He's lucky, defrauding.
Now, hold on. Defrauding, we'll talk about it. So he wasn't trying anything. Abaya was suggesting. So the by the way, Mendy, if you want to move to this side so you can see, so we can talk face to face, that might be better. Anyway. Okay, so the question is, did Abaya really say such a thing that we should use this idea that he should do a knunya like that? But Abaya himself said, we learned earlier in the Masechta, we learned in the eighth Perek. Ezo Rosha Arum, what is the definition of a Rosha Arum, of a crafty Rosha? This is somebody who gives somebody advice to sell the nechassim, to do like what Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying in our Mishnah that you can't do.
Nechassim meaning what?
In other words, like in this case over here, you're going to have him. Nechassim doesn't mean the wife. No, we're talking about the ksuba over here. No, there's two different things. There's two different things. Limkub bin Nechassim is a different case that we had over there. We had the case earlier in the 8th Perek, Nechassim L'chav Acharecha L'Ploini, where you say, I'm giving you my Nechassim, and after you die, I want it to go to Ploini. If somebody suggests that first person to go and sell some of the Nechassim, then we say that's such a thing, that it works, but the person who gave such advice is a Rosh Ha'or.
Not even the person who gave the advice,
because he's not even male, the person who did it himself, fine. At least he's doing it, he has a certain gain out of it. What are you, the third party, gaining from it? So the same thing over here. That was also Rav Shimon Gamliel, but the point is, by the same logic over here, how can you give another person advice to do a knunia like that? The answer is, no, shiny, but surah made abon shiny. Yes, but it's different, first of all, when it's his son. We would assume that it's true in this case, this particular Moshe Bar Atzvi wasn't giving money to his son, but usually we would assume that a person, when he becomes an Arev for his daughter-in-law's ksuba, when he becomes an Arev on behalf of his son's marriage, he is really willing to accept to fully accept that responsibility on himself, that he may actually be paying off the ksuba.
In a normal case.
But that's
not
what
I'm saying. Case,
but this is what we're talking about. So first of all, it's a son, but Tzurhu Meir Abban and Shiny. Second of all, Rav Huna is a Talmid Chacham, and therefore we should be trying to do things as best as possible for him. Now, even if it involves a knunya like this, under the circumstances where we have to have some way. Under the circumstances where it's Bnoi and it's Tzurhu Meir Abban, and most Rishonim say that in fact, and this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that in fact you do need both criteria. You do need that the chassan is his son, not somebody else, and you do need that he's also a Talmid Chacham. Under the circumstances like that, you would be allowed to give advice to somebody to do this kind of thing if it can be done. In this case, it couldn't be done because Rav Huna is a Kohen, but other than that, were it not for that, then yes, a buyer would have been justified in giving him advice, or somebody else would have been justified in giving him advice.
So if he hadn't been a Kohen,
then it would have been advisable for him to do that, yes.
So the
Talmud Chacham can... So the Talmud Chacham can't extort, but in this case, given that After all, an Arev of Ksuba, as we're going to talk about in the next few lines, an Arev of Ksuba, depending on the circumstances, is taking on that responsibility that he may have to pay off the Ksuba. All it is is Reb Shimon Gamliel is concerned about the Knunya that afterwards you're going to get remarried. But in and of itself, there's nothing wrong with a couple divorcing and getting remarried. So therefore, what we're saying over here, what the Gemara is saying over here, he won't be the guarantor again. Fine, but if the chassan is his son, and if the chassan is his son and he's a Talmud Chacham, then you are allowed to do such a thing. You're allowed under those circumstances to make such a knunya. This that Rav Shimon Gamliel was saying, you have to prevent the possibility of such a knunya, is not talking about in this circumstance.
Because
of the Talmud Chacham, and because he's his son, and most people are willing to go the extra mile for their son.
Why can't he get a loan?
If he could get a loan, fine. But here we're talking about evidently he's nothing. Yeah. All right. Okay. So the question is, fine, but we have a different issue. The fact of the matter is, he's an Orev. The Kaimalon Orev Diksuba Lemishtaber. The father. Yeah. We read this Moshe Bar Atzvi. He's an Orev. The Kaimalon Orev Diksuba Lemishtaber. And we know for a fact, as we're going to discuss in the next little bit of Gemara, that an Orev for a Ksuba is not actually Meshabed himself to pay off the Ksuba. Because the reason why he's becoming an Orev, it's basically an honorary thing. You're giving him the honor of making him that he'll be the Orev for the Ksuba. No, you're not Fakert. The idea is, in other words, usually when a person becomes an Orev for a Ksuba, with the exceptions that we're going to say soon, usually he's not actually taking on the obligation that he will actually have to pay off that Ksuba. Usually it's just an honorary thing, because you're taking on a financial obligation, an Orev is needed, and therefore you declare some important person, some close family friend or relative or whatever, you declare him the Orev. Normally he's not Meshabed for reasons that actually the Gemara is going to say soon. Because after all, you're doing a mitzvah, you're facilitating the marriage, and you're becoming the Orev basically in order to facilitate the marriage, in order to make the marriage happen. And he's called an Orev because it's an honorary thing. Basically, it's not actually meant, it's not actually expected, and he's not necessarily actually taking on the obligation that he would actually have to pay off the Ksuba. So why over here are we saying that he would have to? The answer is Kablon. But in this case, he wasn't a regular Orev, he was a Kablon. And as we said yesterday, a Kablon has a greater degree of responsibility than an Orev does. Okay, so the question is, Hanichal Amanda Am a Kablon de Ksuva Afagabda Lesla Nichsila Baal Mishtabid. Fine, that works out according to the opinion, again, which we're going to discuss soon in the Gemara, that if he's a Kablon, not just a regular Orev, but a Kablon, Even if at the time of the marriage the husband has no nechassim, mishtabed, nevertheless, because he's a kablon, nevertheless he's willing to accept that responsibility, even though he knows for sure, because the husband has no nechassim, there's a very high likelihood that he's going to have to pay off that ksuba, unless the husband ends up eventually getting some nechassim. Shaper, well then it works out well. So then we understand the situation. That was Rav Huna's situation. Therefore, we would have had Moshe Bar Atzvi, his father, on the hook to pay off this ksuba, were it not for the fact that we can't make the knunya work because Rav Huna is crying. But according to the opinion, which again we're going to discuss soon, that even with Kablon, he's only Meshabed himself to become that he's going to actually have to pay off the ksuba only if the husband had Nechassim at the time of the marriage, but not otherwise. Even a Kablon is not accepting that responsibility because he's doing it basically as part of the mitzvah. And in this case, Pashtus or Huna didn't have any Nechassim to begin with. Ma'ik Lameima, then what are you going to say? How do you explain the story that we thought that we were going to force the situation that Moshe Bar Atzvi is going to have to pay off the Ksuba?
How do you know that the RS, not the Kablon, the RS is not Meshubad?
For reasons that we'll say soon. We're going to get to soon. We're going to get to a few lines. The answer is, Hiboyis Eima Mehavelei V'ishtaduch. One answer you could answer is, Rav Huna did have Nechassim at the time of the marriage. But later on, those Nechassim were damaged or lost or whatever. So therefore, if we assume, as the Gemara just said, that Moshe Bar Asri, the father of Rav Huna, was in fact a Kablon, not just a regular Orev, but a Kablon.
But the asset disappeared.
But then the asset disappeared. Then it means that, then it means... I'm hot. I'm turning it higher. I'm hot. Therefore, I'm turning it higher. Before it was on low. Okay. Anyway.
It worked.
Yeah.
I'm on now, too.
Okay. Onward. If Rav Huna had nechassim at the time of his marriage, and later on those nechassim disappeared, fine. Because Moshe Bar Asri was a kablon, therefore he to begin with accepted the responsibility for the ksuba on himself, because he didn't figure at the time there's any chance that he is going to have to actually pay that ksuba. Now later on, taka it happens, he already accepted that responsibility, as opposed to if he had been a regular orev, then not. That's one answer. Another answer you could say is, again, it's different with a father and a son, where a father is willing to take on that responsibility even if his son doesn't have any assets at the time of the marriage. No, that's what we're saying. It would say there's a difference. If there's a kablon and the chosin is his son, then he's willing to take on more responsibility than a regular orev or even orev kablon would. So therefore, we could answer that he was willing to take on that responsibility. He does know he's on the hook to pay that silver. Ordinarily, though, he figured that Rav Huna and his wife are going to have a long and happy marriage. Therefore, he's not going to ever be in a situation where he has to pay that ksuba, at least not for a long time to come. Abaya thought we can arrange a knunya over here in order to get Rav Huna some money. Turned out it doesn't work. But nevertheless, though, we can still say that Moshe Bar Asri would have been on the hook had Rav Huna actually divorced his wife, or had he died, then he taka would be on the hook to pay the ksuba because it's his son. There is, by the way, now there is
automatically, because it's the son, the father is
greater. Yeah. Why? There is, because that person is usually willing to go the extra mile for his son. Now there is another detail that it talks about in Shulchan Aruch, which is if you make a kinyan on it, then you actually have a machloek. You actually have a machloek between the machaber and the rama, whether a kinyan helps still only by a kablon. Do you need both? In other words, to be a kablon and a kinyan. Or is it enough if you made a kinyan even if you didn't say, even if it wasn't his son or even if it wasn't? Okay. Now, what's the discussion that we're going to talk about whether an orev or ksuba is or isn't actually on the hook for the ksuba? To Itmar, as in fact, we have a discussion on that topic. Orev to ksuba, divrei hakol lo mishtabed. If a person says that I'm an orev for ksuba, he's definitely not mishtabed himself. Unless, as we said before, maybe if it's a son, but no, not even. Maybe he has to be a kablon at least in order to do that. Right. If he's just being called an orev, then he's definitely not mishabin himself to the ksuba. Because then, as the Gemara is going to say soon, he only did it in order to facilitate the mitzvah of them getting married. He's like the equivalent of a shabson. So he's not actually on the hook for anything. Kablon debal chayv divrei hakol mishtabed. On the other hand, if he says it's a kablon and we're not talking about a ksuba, but we're talking about a regular loan, then for sure he's mishtabed. Kablon de ksuba va'orev debal chayv. What about if it's a ksuba, but he's called a kablon, or it's a regular loan, but he's calling himself an orev? Pligi. That you have a machloek. Marsova, one opinion holds, Yisle nichsel aloiv mishtabed, Yisle le mishtabed. One opinion, which is what we had in our Mishnah of Shimon Gamliel versus the Chachamim, held that if the Ksabon Ksuba or the Baal Chayv, you're talking about a Ksuba, but you're talking about a Kablam, or you're talking about a regular Chayv, but you're talking about an Ari. So the question is, which one takes precedence? The fact that it's a ksuba, or the fact that he's called a kablon, which therefore has
the same time a kablon.
No. It's two different cases. If it's a ksuba and he's called a kablon, or if it's a chayv and he's called an orev, what level of responsibility is he taking in either case? Mar sofar, one opinion holds the isle nichsel aloiv mishtabed, yilesel aloiv mishtabed. One opinion holds only if the loivet has nechassim, or the loiver or the husband in the case of a ksuba, only then is the orev or the kablon mishabed himself. Ilesle le mishabed, but if the husband or the loiver does not have nechassim at the time, then the orev or the kablon in the case of a ksuba is not mishabed himself, because he doesn't want to accept that level of responsibility, and we can't assume at the initiation, yes, at the initiation of the loan or at the time of the marriage when the ksuba is. There have to be assets in order for him to be mishabed. Or marsava bein isle bein lesse.
The assets disappearing.
Fine, but that's less of a risk than there not being any to be. Okay. Where is the other opinion? So again, we had an our Mishnah. We had the Chachamim in our Mishnah saying you put him in an Arev, and Reb Shimon Gamliel saying either way, you put him in an Arev. So the Reb Shimon Gamliel would say that. So Reb Shimon Gamliel would say it depends whether he has Mechafim or not. Umar Sover and the Tanakama would hold Ben Isler Ben less than Mishtabit. Whether he has or he doesn't, either way, the fact that it's Suba, but you called yourself a Kabbalah, or the fact that it's a loan, even if you're just told an Arev, you're still Mishtabit yourself.
Who is this opinion?
This opinion would be the Chum, Rav Mishnah.
Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, so he has to answer.
Right. The Hilchasa, and the bottom line halacha is, Arev ben Islay ben less than Mishtabit. Indeed, if he's called an Arev, certainly if he's called a Tablon, but even if he's only called an Arev, whether the loiva has Mesotim at the time, or the loiva or the husband has Mesotim at the time, or whether or not, Mishtabit, he is Mishtabit himself. There still is the idea that you have to go after the loiva or after the husband first, but he is Mishtabit himself. It's not just Bar me Arev Jiksuba, except for the case of an Arev of Jiksuba. The Afagab the Islay the Baal, because then in that case, even if the husband has Nefasim at the time of the marriage, Loy Mishtabit, nevertheless the Arev is not Mishtabit. So that's why we were saying before, in the story of Moshe Bar Atzvi, we had to say that he was a Kablon. If he was an Arev, that wouldn't be enough for him to be on the hook. Yeah. My time, why is that? Mitzvah, de'ovad, because number one, all he did is he did it for the sake of a mitzvah. He didn't accept the arevos in order to actually be on the hook to pay the ksuba. He accepted the arevos in order that the wedding should be able to take place. That this way, if they have an arev, they're willing to go through with the wedding. And the law of Medi Chosra, and furthermore, she's not actually losing anything because it's not like she had to give out any money at the time. In fact, the Rashbam says marriage is better for her, as the famous expression has all over the place in Shas. That a woman wants to be married.
Can a woman become
Arab Sula? Yeah.
Yeah,
no reason why not. Yeah. I don't see why not. So therefore, in that case, we assume his arevos was necessary for the wedding to happen, fine. But we don't assume that his arevos was actually meant to accept responsibility that he will pay off the tzuba. Unless he's a kablon, or again, in Shulchan Aruch, you have machlokes between the machaber and the rama, if he did a kinyan. Maybe that changes.
Either
it means a loshen of the kablon, or it means according to Rashi and Rashbam earlier in the Masechta, that it means he actually takes the money from point A to point B, which in this case, in the case of the ksuba, it would mean that he's the one with whom the money for the ksuba is deposited. Yeah. Nugent. Omer of Hona. Shchivmera shehikdish kol mechotah. For shchivmera, declares that all of the mechasim should be hektish, but omer mona l'ploini biyadi, and then he says that I owe ploini a mon. No, we had similar concepts. We didn't have this exact case. We had similar cases. No. Hold on. Nemon, we believe him. We believe him that he actually does owe that other person that money. Since we're talking about knunya, that's why we're bringing this in here. It's a chazaka. A person is not going to make a knunya against hektish. We can assume that it's not just he's saying, I owe that person the money in order that later on then that guy will be moichel it back to him or whatever, and then he'll have money.
We should say that of any person, why we have to take a shkumara.
Well, because we're saying that's
it. We don't doubt his words.
Because we're going to see as we go through the sugya, we're going to see that certain of the dinim. What we're talking about over here is with, well, first of all, okay, I'll tell you. Tosfos actually learns that we're not talking about he's a shchivmera at the time he's makdish. Tosfos actually learns that when he was a bori, when he was healthy, he was makdish in the chassid. Now, later on, as a shchivmera, he says, mona l'ploini biyadi. The reason is because otherwise, if he's a bari, then we still would have to be concerned. True, usually, einot amoitz k'nuni ala hektish, but after all, if he has something to benefit from it, maybe he would. But over here, where he's a shchivmera, and he doesn't stand to benefit from it anyway, then not. There are other Rishonim who have different other explanations of the exact case over here. Does it mean that he said one after the other as a shchivmera that all my nechasim behektish but a monet pliny? Does it mean he said it later on? There's a few different variations among the Rishonim.
So if you say that far, then you don't have to say in it a mischina artis.
saying that he won't benefit anyway.
No, but that's the point. Ein Adam Chayta Kanuni Al Hakdish, when he has nothing himself to benefit from it. That's what Tosafot says at the end. Ein Adam Chayta V'loy Loy, that the person is not going to do an Aveira when it doesn't benefit him himself. So the question
is,
he's not a Shchivinah when he declares the Hakdish. He's a Shchivinah when he says Mon of the Chayta. Question is, Maskefot of Nachman, so Yadam Oysa Knunya Abba. No, fine, but you could ask by the same logic, is a person going to make Knunya against his own children, that in a way that other people are going to get his Nechasim at the expense of his son? And we find a case where we do have to be sort of concerned about that. The Rav Shmuel Dami Tabayu, because you have a somewhat related din, where Rav and Shmuel both say, Shchivmerah Shalom Mona L'Ploini B'Yadi, if a Shchivmerah says that I owe Ploini a Mona, only if Omar Tnu, only if he says, give it to him, noisnin, only then do you give. Loy Omar Tnu, a noisnin, but if he didn't say give it, then you don't actually give it to him. So, in other words, even he's admitting that he's admitting that he owes the other guy a mana, Alma, which means we can prove, now why would he have said mana l'poini b'yodi if in fact he doesn't plan to give it to him? Adam also, shalo l'hashdiya et bono. A person is likely to not want people to think that his sons are satisfied and rich. He doesn't want that people should think that he's rich, that his sons are rich, or whatever. They'll be for different Rishonim talk about different possibilities. First of all, he may recover. He doesn't want, if he recovers, that people from now on are going to know he's rich. There can be, for example, I think the Ritva talks about, he may be concerned for his reputation. Even if he passes away, he's still concerned for his reputation. If people know, he was rich, so why wasn't he giving as much tzedakah as we expected to, or whatever, you know? So, by the same logic, Kohanami, that's why he says one of the plenty, because he wants people to think that he actually...
difference, even if he's rich, to say
a mana is a substantial amount of money. A mana is 100 zuz. It's in those times, it was a fair amount of money.
That would be like how many years' salary?
It would be I don't know how many years' salary. I mean, but it would be enough to live on for 6 months. It'd be enough to live on, because 200 zuz enough to live
like
on for a year.
Yeah. Salary. So if your salary is, so
give me
your
living. Yeah, in modern terms, it would still be a couple of grand. Anyway, well, by the same logic over here, why should we assume when it comes to Hekdesh, when he says mona l'ploini b'yadi, that he actually means it? Maybe he just again doesn't want that people should think that to hide his wealth. So why should Rav Huna say that you give the money even without him saying tnu?
That's
the question. No, it doesn't even matter. The same logic. In other words, you're saying when he says mona l'ploini b'yadi, when it's with regard to Hekdesh, we give it regardless. But if he says mona l'ploini b'yadi, where the rest of it would be going to his children, we say only if he says tnu. What's the difference? If you're saying that he won't make a tnunya on Hekdesh, he's not going to make a tnunya against his own children either. The answer is ki kamar Rav Huna hasam the nakit shtara. Yes, but the case that Rav Huna is talking about, the case involving Hekdesh and the mona, is talking about that the other person, it has a shtar in his possession. He has a shtar which shows it's not against him. In other words, it's not just a milva alpe. The other guy has a shtar. And the point is now the Shivra admitted that it is valid, which, as we're going to see in the Gemara soon, that makes a difference if he admits it as well.
The Shtar doesn't have to say anything.
No, it does, because nevertheless, among other things, because first of all, if just because the guy has a Shtar, the usual rule is that if you want to collect from Yisoimim, the usual rule is you need a Shvua. So in this case, Tosfos points out that, among other things, if the Shchivra is Moida, that accomplishes, as we're going to see soon in the Gemara, that makes the Shtar the equivalent of a Shtar Mekuyam. Now no Shvura is necessary.
Moida.
It's Moida, yeah.
What exactly is Tosfos Lelah?
It's a similar logic to Lelah Asbiyas Bono, but it means he doesn't want people to think that he's rich.
What is he doing? He's giving it all to accuracy. He's donating it. It's not like he's dying.
But the case was that he was a Shchivra. He is, but he may recover. He may recover, but he doesn't want people to think.
People can't forgive that he's rich. I mean, Leila has children. You know, he doesn't want the...
Yeah, again, you may have. He figures...
He's giving it all to the shnur.
All right, but Hektish is not shnur.
I mean, he's giving it all for the best
Okay, fine, but nevertheless, he figures if people still know, that he has some money, fine, he's still going to start getting tzedakah calls.
Yeah, he gave everything.
He didn't. That's the thing. It seems like he gave everything, but instead he said money the point of the audience. So we're saying, we don't say that he's just saying it shalak via asma. We're saying he actually means it.
What is the shalak via asma? What exactly is he trying to avoid?
He's trying to avoid. He doesn't want people to know that he still has a money.
But he doesn't have the money. The money belongs to
somebody. In that case, that's why he's saying mona l'ploni b'yadi. And we're saying we take him at his word because it's not just the case he's saying mona l'ploni b'yadi where conceivably he might be saying it lash via asma, shalak via asma. The case is, the other guy who he says that this Pliny actually has a shtar, and all he's doing is being moida that shtar is valid and that's still outstanding. So if it weren't for that, we would say that he's doing it shaloi lach via asma. We would apply the same thing and say that only if he says tnu do you give it. That's the point. Okay, so the question is, Miklal did Abba Shmuel de l'nokat shtara? That's not a question, really. Miklal did Abba Shmuel de l'nokat shtara? In that case, then it is a question. Miklal did Abba Shmuel, but lo nakat shtara. So in that case, does that imply then, if we're saying that Rav Huna is not evidently arguing with Rav and Shmuel, if his case is talking about where the other guy has a shtar, evidently Rav and Shmuel's case where there's no hektish involved, just as Yoshim, and he says mon l'ploni b'yadi, but only if he says tzinu do you give it. Evidently, that case must be, it sounds like, where he doesn't have a shtar. The problem with that is, Omat Tnu Noisin, what do you mean? If he says give it, then you should give it. Milval Peh, however, if the guy doesn't have a shtar, then it's Milval Peh. But Rav Shmuel Dami Tavayu and Rav and Shmuel both say that the din is Milval Peh ain't a go velomina Yoshin velomina Lakochas. A Milval Peh, you cannot collect from the Yoshin, you cannot collect from the Lakochas. So even if he says Tnu, what's the difference? There's no shtar. So yes, the Malva is can't be recovered, exactly. By the way, I mean, the Rashbam says, what about mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames? The Rashbam says, if it's because of the matter of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames, they would have to wait until after he's dead. Right, he's not dead yet. Tosfos says differently, actually. Tosfos mentions a different svara. What about divrei shchiv merak suvin v'chiv mesurin? Tosfos says that's when he's doing a matana. Yeah, they don't want, as we learned before, shleiti torah daite olav. We don't want him to feel bad that his instructions are not going to be kept. But like this, where he's saying that previously he borrowed money and now I want it paid off. That's not divreshchid medak suvim mechim asurid. Then it's just like anybody else saying something.
Yeah, because he borrowed the money before he was shchid.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so the point is, obviously then the distinction between Rav Huna's din and Rav and Shmuel's din can't be whether there's a shtar or not, because if there's no shtar, then there's not going to be any tnu in any case.
And if there is a
shtar, then that was Rav Huna's case, where we said that you'd give it regardless whether he said tnu or not. So then in that case, in Rav and Shmuel's din, it should have to be the same way. Ella, Amar Rav Nachman, Aidi v'Aidi did not get shtar. No, rather Rav Huna says, both cases, both Rav Huna's case and Rav and Shmuel's case are talking about where there is a shtar, v'loy kasha, but it's still not a contradiction, because hod mekuyam, hod loy mekuyam. The difference is whether the shtar is mekuyam, whether the shtar already has been mekuyam by Beis Din, or not. Namely, Amma Tnu, so therefore, in Rav and Shmuel's case, what it means is by saying Tnu, Kaime Lishtari, it's the equivalent of being Mekayim Lishtar. Now at that point, the Malva doesn't have to be further Mekayim it, therefore go ahead and no, the Shtar was not yet Mekuyim, but now that the Shiv Merah says Tnu, that's the equivalent of being Mekayim Lishtar. That is the equivalent of him saying, I agree that this Shtar is valid. I have no possibilities that, I have no suspicions that the Shtar is forged. Or anything like that.
So that's considered
Mekuyim. And here's where Tosfos points out, once it's Mekuyim, then the point is, once it's Mekuyim, by his statement, then it means now this Malva will be able to collect without a Shavur. Otherwise, he would have the usual thing. Abol Tara Menichsi Yisayim, he's going to need a Shavur. Hodloy Mekuyim, as opposed to the other case he's talking about, we're not Mekuyim yet, right, where you didn't say Tznu. So that's Rav Huna's case. But in that case, it would have to be the Malva already had the Shtar previously Mekuyim. He had previously gone to Beis Din and had the Mekayim. Therefore, it doesn't matter what the Shiv Merah says. Whether he says Tznu or not, you still give it to him. So it's not really a Machlokes. It's two different scenarios. One where the Shtar is Mekuyim and one where it's not.
in both different.
No, in other words,
making him a Mekuyam.
Right? But there are two different ways of making him a Mekuyam. One involves the Shiv Menach saying, and the other one doesn't. The other one doesn't require his input at all, because Beis Din was running a Mekuyam. Yeah. Another din, Amar Rabba. Shivmirash, I'm a mona la plenty biyadi. What about the Shivmirash says that I owe plenty a mona. However, but Omri Yisaimim parainu. But then the Yisaimim say that after he died, we paid it off. Nemoni. Then we believe it. We believe them. But tnu mona la plenty. But if he says not just I owe plenty a mona, but he says give plenty a mona. But Omri Yisaimim parainu. And then the Yisaimim say we paid it off. Ain nemon. And then we say we don't believe them. Question is klapilaya. Which way are you going? You know, it's backwards. Ipcha mistabra. It should be the svara should be the other way around. Oma tnu mona. If he says tnu mona, given the paskavu in lamilsa, since the father said the complete statement that it has to be given. Ikalameimer No. Hold on. Ikalameimer depare. Then logically, you could say that the Simon could say, okay, well, our father told us to pay, so we followed his instructions. We paid it off already. But on the other hand, you should argue if the father only said, as a matter of fact statement, but he's not actually saying what to do about it. Given to like Pasuk Avu in Lamilsa, since their father didn't give explicit instructions what to do. It seems more logical to say they probably didn't pay. They probably didn't pay him off. So why is Rava saying the other way around? That in the case where he just says mona la plenty biyadi, we do believe them to say parainu and not the other way around. Yeah. Ela itmar hochi itmar. So no, rather the statement that Rava said has to be changed a little bit. Now Tosfos points out the Gemara could have just said you flip it around. However, the Gemara knew that it's not valid to flip it around. The Gemara knew that if he says mona la plenty biyadi, we do believe them to say parainu. So we have to figure out what's the scenario where we would believe them even though he didn't explicitly say tenu. It's not it. All right. So it's like this. Shiv Menach Shama Mona La Plenty Biyadi. So he says, I owe plenty of money. But Omer Yisaimim, and then Yisaimim say, here's the wrinkle. Chaza V'Omer Lano Abra Paraisi. Our father later on, after he made that statement, later on he told us that he paid it. Nemonim. Then we can believe that.
That's possible.
That why my time at Idkori Midtar. Because we can say he probably remembered. He thought that he still had the loan outstanding. Yeah. Later on, he remembered that he paid.
Big interest.
No. They may have a big interest, but nevertheless, we still. If the other guy wants to claim that not, he may have to swear a shvur test at least. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Anytime someone can swear a shvur and get the money, you're really giving the guy an opportunity.
Well, okay, yeah. Most people are not going to swear. People are not going to usually swear falsely. So yeah.
I mean, if they're right about it.
Right. On the other hand, snu mona la plenty, but if he says give a mona to plenty, but omri yisaimim chaz of ala ala paraisi, and then the yisaimim say he said that he paid it, ain nemon, and then we don't believe him. The im is the pare, because if in fact he had paid them, lo hava ala snu, he would not have said give it in the first place. But then he would have said because we don't assume that a person should say, you know, I'm because that he should say I'm thinking I still have a loan outstanding and let's figure it out and eventually remembers that I paid fine. But when he actually said give it, then already that means he knows it's still outstanding. Then already we would need more proof than just their say so to say that they paid it all. In other words, paraisi doesn't mean I paid it right now. It means I already previously paid it off. So then actually Tosfos says he has a migui. He could have said paraisi later on. So instead he's saying paraisi now. So that's the case then. So because he said tnu mona la plenty, that is why we don't believe them to just say that later on he told us that he actually paid it off.
So why can't they say they paid it off between tnu and the debt?
They'll have to put in some kind of proof for it.
And you know, then we'll have a maybe. So, you know.
The point is that Ashbam says the fact that he said, if I can't, the fact that he didn't say tnu in the first case is because he himself isn't sure. He can't remember at the moment whether he paid it off. So he's holding off on saying tnu till he can figure it out. And eventually, Taka, you remember that part IP and then
the other way around also, then he could say, since he doesn't remember he's holding back, he could say maybe he's saying tnu and he forgot that he already paid.
No, but he didn't say tnu. That's in the first case. In the second case, he said tnu.
In the second case, where
he goes so far as to say tnu,
yeah.
Then we would say already if he's doing that, it must be that he actually knows that the loan is still outstanding. No, that's what we're saying. Yeah. Well, that's similar to that, yeah. Another deal.
And if one comes and says, if you get you lost your memory, you didn't pay.
Then we're talking about where the guy, you have to remember the definition of a shchiv merah is the guy is not, he doesn't have Alzheimer's disease or whatever. His brain is still fully functional. He's just weak and sick and in bed and will probably be dying in the next few weeks or something. But it's not.
You never live long enough to have Alzheimer's disease.
That is also true, yeah.
Most people.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, another din. Boy, Robert. Shchivra shahoida ma. Shchivra shahoida. If a shchivra admits that he owes money. Now, on the face of it, this is sort of similar to the case before where he said mana l'chayin biyadi. So there's a couple of different approaches among the Rishonim. The Rif says that Rava is not necessarily arguing with Rav and Shmuel, where he's going to say a different din, but what exactly the point is that he's saying differently. There's a couple of different approaches among the Rishonim. Is it, for example, that here we're talking about where the other guy confronted him and he admitted to it, and the Rosh says that way, versus the other case was that he said it voluntarily? Or another way of looking at it is it depends, like what tone of voice is he saying it in? Is he saying it like as a conversational thing, or is he saying it like as a, you know, I got to get this taken care of before I die? That would be the hodah that we're talking about over here. Anyway, so Rava says, Shchivin Ashahoida, Mahu, what is the din? Sorech loima atim edai, in sorech loima atim edai. Does he actually need to tell the people who are standing there, you are my agent? Now, when you have a normal case, not a Shchivin Ashahoida, then the din is, we'll learn about this in Sanhedrin in another month or so, Be'ez Hashem, that in order for a Hedah to be valid, it's not just good enough for me to say one day, I owe you X amount of money. You actually have to turn to the people who are there as potential Edim and say to them, you be Edim that I'm admitting that I owe Pliny X amount.
To be valid
Edim. Otherwise, not. Because otherwise you can say, Meshaka HaYisibah. Otherwise, you can say, I was just pulling your leg, basically. But like this, if he tells them Atim Edai, then they actually can now come to Beis Din on that basis and say he admitted that he owes plenty of money or whatever it is.
Really, yeah.
So over here, does he need to say Atim Edai? In Sarach Lema Atim Edai, or maybe not. That's what we're asking as a Shchivra. Another question we can ask, Sarach Shoyemach Ksoivu, or in Sarach Lema Ksoivu? Another question we can ask, does he have to say, write it down, which we learned way back in the third paragraph. So we learned it. We learned back in Cheskas Abbasim when we talked about some dinim of Hadar over there. We said, even if you're moida in front of two edim, still, if they're going to write that down, you need permission from the one who's moida in order to be able to write it down. They can't just unilaterally write it down.
If they're present in there,
because they may not be available later on when the malva comes to collect or whatever it is. So therefore, if the malva wants a written document to say that these edim heard this hadah, that you need the permission of the moida in order to do that. Hadah b'knishnayim b'tzarech loyim b'tzarech.
Who's the moida?
The moida is a loiva, let's say, or whatever. It could be a loiva. It could be any number of reasons why he owes money. In order for them to write a shtar that the malva can then use, that he can bring to Beis Din, you need the permission of the loiva to write it. We learned that back 130 odd blocks ago, 4 months ago, yeah. Okay. The question is, in this case of our Shchiv Merah, does he need to do that as well? Basically, the question is, Adam Meshata Meshach Misa, or you know, Meshata Meshach Misa. This that was saying that a person is able to say, Meshata HaYisibach, that I was just pulling your leg, I didn't actually mean it as a binding statement, or I didn't mean for it to be written down. Can we say the same thing applies, Meshach Misa, before he dies, or not? Maybe before a person dies, he's going to get serious.
How do you know when he dies?
He doesn't, but he's a shlimmer already. He knows he's going to be, the pashtun is going to be dying soon. That's true. It's not necessarily. I mean, rov cholim l'chayim, fine, but nevertheless, rov goyses and lamis, they're fine. I mean, a shlimmer is sort of halfway between a cholim and goyses, but whatever, yeah. Boss of the boyer, after Rava asked the question, hoda poshta, then he answered the question. No, a person does not do something like that. A person does not play games like that. And the divrei shtibmerak suvenuchim esurin damu. And when a shtibmerak says something, it's the equivalent of written and signed. Which now, by the way, Tosfos says it doesn't mean earlier when we use that concept in the previous perek, it meant that you don't need a kinyan to confirm what he said. It's considered as if it's signed and delivered. Therefore, in other words, so because ain adam b'shata b'shata nisa, therefore he doesn't need to say atam eidai, because what he says is already considered k'sovim l'chim asurin, therefore he doesn't need to say k'sovim. They can write it even without him saying that they should do so.
Why did Igmar ask such a
question? Because the question had to be asked.
Because what?
Because you never know. Nevertheless, maybe they... Yes, as Tosfos points out, that actually K'suvim L'chim Asurin has a little bit of a different meaning here than we used in the previous perek. In the previous perek, we meant that if he says something, you don't need a kinyan to confirm it. Here what we're saying is a shimra. Here what we're saying, you don't need a kinyan to confirm it. Here what we mean is that K'suvim L'chim Asurin, it's considered as if it's already written, therefore it's the equivalent of him already saying so. It's the equivalent as if he already said right. And therefore that's it, it can be written.
So what did we ask the question?
We had to ask the question. Now we have the answer. If we didn't have the question and we didn't have the answer, we wouldn't know the din. Okay. Last Mishnah of the Masechta. Amalves chaveira b'shtar, when a person lends somebody else money with a shtar, goyvim nechassim b'shabadim. He can collect from nechassim b'shabadim. And even, as the Rashbam points out, even if the shtar doesn't say anything about a shibud or achrayus or whatever, achrayus Torah sofer, therefore he can still collect from b'shabadim. We'll learn in the Gemara, where we've talked any number of times about the concept of shibud, when a shtar is written, but we're going to learn in the Gemara what's the underlying basis for that concept. Al yidei edim, on the other hand, if you only lent him money in the presence of edim, and there was no shtar, goyvim nechassim b'nechor, and then he can only collect from nechassim b'nechor. Again, for reasons which we'll talk about in the Gemara. Nechassim b'shabad, nechassim b'nechor, are the ones he still has in his possession at the time when the loan comes due. No, we're talking about karka. Metalklin is another matter. Metalklin is never meshubad to a bal choyv, only after the tachanas hagayin. If the malva needs to end up collecting, then fine. Beis Din will send a shliach into the house and start taking out stuff. Mishabadim and Menechorim. Menechorim means stuff that he still means karka that he still owns. Mishabadim means that he sold after the loan was taken out, but he sold karka to somebody else. More cases where you can only collect from Menechorim. If the malva pulls out a piece of paper that has the loiva's writing on it that says that he owes money, there's no edim, there's no nothing. This is the case we talked about earlier in the perek. We said don't sign your name on a blank piece of paper because the guy can write a whole shtar above it. So this is goyvim nechassim b'nechorin. So fine, since there's no edim, you can't collect from mishabodim. But nevertheless, since you have the loiva himself saying that, then nevertheless you can collect from nechassim b'nechorin. From nechassim that actually belong to the loiva still at the time when the loan comes due. Another din, orev hayotze la'achat chitum shtoreth. If you have the orev's statement that he's an orev comes after the signatures of the edim, so you have the body of the shtar, you have pliny ben pliny aid, and underneath that it says, I, pliny ben pliny, I'm an orev for this. So then, goyim nechassim nechorin, and then also, you can only collect from the orev from the chasam nechorin, because then it's not a milva with shtar it's considered, because the edim didn't sign on that. The signatures are before that. That statement only came afterwards. So fine, the guy can be an orev, but but nevertheless, you can only collect from his nechorin. You don't have the ability to collect from his own possessions, right? Not from his mishabot. Maisa balafneira bishmol. In fact, such a case came to Rabbi Shmuel. Vama goyvim nechassim b'nechorin. Rabbi Shmuel said, like we just said, that you can collect from the orev nechassim b'nechorin. However, amalei ben nanas. But ben nanas said, ain a goyvim loyvim nechassim b'shabadim loyvim nechassim b'nechorin. No, as a matter of fact, in a case like that, where the orev's signature is after the signatures of the edim on the shtar, no, you can't collect from him at all. He's not really an orev. He's not really an orev in that case. Because he's after the signatures of Edim. Omer lo lomo. So Rabbi Shmuel asks him, why not? Why shouldn't the guy, it says on the paper, it says on the paper that he agreed to be an Arev. Why shouldn't he be an Arev? Omer lo, so Rabbi Bananas tells him like this. Consider the following case. Forget about the case where it's written in the shtar. What about, picture a case where he becomes an Arev verbally, long after the fact. One person is strangling the other guy, not literally strangling him, like killing, but in other words, like he has his hand around the other guy's neck, like, "Nu, where's my money? I lent you this money a year ago. Where is it?" And somebody else, another friend of his, finds him in the street. But Amalai, and he tells him, "Hanachloi, leave him alone. Get your hands off around his neck. Bani etemach, and I'll give you the money." The fact is potter. The fact is this guy is potter. Shaloy al amunasa hil bahu, because he didn't lend the money intending to have, when the Malva originally lent the money a year earlier, he didn't do it al manas that this guy is going to be the Arev, because obviously he wasn't at the time. He's only saying I'm going to be the Arev now. Therefore, it's not a real commitment. It's considered the Gemara. Not forced, because the Arev himself is not forced. But it's called, the Gemara calls it in a few places, patumi mili ba'alma. It's just like fattening up words. It's words to make the other guy feel good. It doesn't really have any validity in halacha. So therefore, by the same logic, Banana says, when you have the shtar and the edim sign on it, and after that it says this guy is an Arev, means therefore he's only an Arev after the fact. So by the same logic, he can't really be an Arev. He didn't lend him money knowing that this guy is going to be an Arev, because the Arev is only signed after the edim sign. Ela ezu Arev shu chayev. So what is the case? Banana says where an Arev would be chayev. Halveu v'ani noitamach. If to begin with, when the loan is going to be taken out, the Arev says to the Malva, "You lend him money, and I will give it to you," or the various other lashonis that we talked about yesterday.
Before
the signing, chayev. Then he's chayev as an Arev. Shekena l'amunase hilvahu. Because then we can say that the Malva lent him money, trusting that this guy is going to be the Arev. So then that's a real serious commitment. You can't say that that's Ptumi Mili Ba'alma. So for Omer Rabbi Shmuel, so Rabbi, wait. Well, we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow who the halacha is like. For Omer Rabbi Shmuel, so Rabbi Shmuel said after this discussion, this is kind of a summary of all the bavos. This is kind of a summary of all the dini mominus that we've learned so far. If somebody wants to be wise, yasik the dini mominus. He should involve himself in learning about dini mominus. Because there's no greater subject in the Torah than them. They're like a spring that's always welling up. Now, why is that? There's a number of different interesting explanations that the various Mephoshim have. One of them is that first of all, when we say Kamayin Hanivea, one idea is there are always new kinds of Dini Mominus coming up. There are always new kinds of business deals, new kinds of financial instruments, new kinds of whatever coming up. But there's also the idea, for example, that the Tiferes Yisrael talks about, in most other areas of Torah, you have a substantial amount of information in Torah Shebichtav, and then we use the Yud Gimel Midas Shatoran and Yashas Behem to learn the halachas. When it comes to Dini Mominus, especially most of the stuff we've had in Bava Basra, there's very little psukim about it. Most of it comes from the chokhmah of the chachamim, from how they learn with their chokhmah what the appropriate din should be and what the fair thing to do and so forth. In that sense, then haroitza shiyachim. If you want to be really wise, you should be involved in dinim mominus, because it takes much more, and it's kamayan aniveya. It comes much more welling out of your own brain rather than out of something that explicitly says in the Torah. No, once a chacham thinks, was given to Moshe. But in other words, the basic underlying concepts were given to Moshe by the Eibishter. But much more in Dini Mominus than in other parts of the Torah, you have the actual application of it comes from how the chachamim themselves deduce things, rather than how a Talmud chacham himself deduces things, not from the psukim, but rather from applying the psukim, right? There's also an idea that Hafla talks about in his Sefer Ponim Yofus on Torah. He says many other areas of Torah you have in a somewhat similar vein but different. Many other areas in Torah you can't necessarily deduce from one din to another. For example, the Gemara tells us in Tereifis, and the Gemara tells us in Holin, that, for example, if you're told that a certain condition makes an animal Tereifa, you can't draw an analogy and say, well, by analogy, a similar case in another organ or a different part of this organ would also make it Tereifa. It's not necessarily that way. There's what you're told, and that's that. As opposed to Dini Mominus, there's much more room for analogy from one case to another, and therefore he says that's why we call it Miksoya. Miksoya literally means a corner. Like we have where two walls come together, and you can easily go from one wall to the other. They hold each other up. So that's the Dini Mominus on Miksoya Shabbatora in that sense, where you have one part of it illuminates a whole different area of Dini Mominus. Well, we'll just finish off the Mishnah, but yeah. Maybe we can do it. We can start the Gemara, maybe. I don't know. We still have a few minutes. But anyway. But Haroitza Shiyasik, Dini Mominus, and Rishmael continues, somebody who wants to really be thoroughly involved in Dini Mominus, Yishamash Shimon Ben Nanas. He should be serving as a Talmud, this Ben Nanas, Shimon Ben Nanas from earlier in the Mishnah. Now, even though Rabbi Shmuel disagreed with him,
yeah.
And we'll see in the Gemara, as a matter of fact, the halacha is not even like him. Nevertheless, Rabbi Shmuel is saying he knows his way around Dini Mominus.
Did he agree after Benamis?
Didn't agree.
Well, so
we're
going
like to.
Well, it was, but. So what we're going to say in the Gemara, actually, we'll learn tomorrow, is that we'll see in the Gemara. In the case of Arev Hayotze L'Achav Chitum Shtoris, which was the actual case they were arguing about, the halacha is not like Benamis. The halacha is like a Bishmol. You can collect from Bnei Chorin. The case of Chanuk we'll deal with also tomorrow. We'll deal with tomorrow in the Gemara. It's different whether you make a Kinyan or not. But the point is, Rabbi Shmuel is nevertheless saying, still, if you really want to know your way around this stuff, you shamash as Shimon Ben Nanas. Now, you're saying it's too late. Shimon Ben Nanas is already long since in Olam Haba. But Pashtus, though, I mean, the fact that it's in the Mishnah means it is meant for all time. One idea that maybe we see Bakashas over here, Ben Nanas was a Talmud. You see, he's not called Reb, he's just called first Ben Nanas and then Shimon Ben Nanas. So even a Talmud like that, even a Talmud who's very sharp and he's in him, is somebody who maybe doesn't yet deserve the title Rebbe. Nevertheless, though, you want to learn Dini Mominus, you want to be a Chacham and Dini Mominus, learn from such a person, from a person who partifs himself in it, like Ben Nanas. Just to mention also briefly, Reb Levick mentions briefly in one place in the Kutta Levi Yitzchak that the word nanas means short. Dini Mominus are associated with Gvura. And thus we say in Pasach Aliyah every Friday, that you have Chad Arich, Chad Ksir, Chad Benim. You have a long line, Chesed Netzach, and the Chokma Chesed Netzach. You have the short line, which is the Sadaflo, Bina Gvura and Enhoi. That's the short side. That's why Benana specifically, the son of the short one, is associated especially with Dini Mominus, he says.
Why is Dini Mominus Gvura?
Because that's what it is. It involves Gvura of taking money from one person and giving it to another. By the way,
Dini Tarek,
something else. I don't know if it's Chesed. Maybe it's also. It's a different part of Gvura. I mean, there's different types of Gvuras as well. You know? But I'll tell you one other thing also, why we're calling Dini Mominus such Chachma, there's an idea. I think the Tiferet Yisrael says this also. Mainly with other areas in Torah, you can be machmer if you don't know for sure. Dini Mominus, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You're machmer on one person, you're going to be makel on the other. Yeah, right. Therefore, you have to know what the din is rather than just being machmer to be out there.